I'm Charlie Rose.
I'm Nora O'Donnell.
And I'm Gail King. Hey, this is a CBS This Morning podcast.
Hello and welcome to the CBS This Morning podcast. I'm CBS News contributor Jamie Wax, and we are back with one of our favorite guests of recent weeks, talking with Variety's TV critic Sonia Saraya in the Midtown Manhattan office of Variety. It's so good to talk to you again.
Thank you.
I really feel like, you know, what we need is like booze and we need to be at a bar because it's such a pleasure to talk about television with you. But every time we talk, it makes me realize there is no other segment of entertainment that has as much to talk about as television.
Oh,
right,
there's
now
a lot. Yeah. Yeah.
How do you, as a television critic, even keep up with it? We all talk about the fact that there's too much TV for any of us to keep up with. I mean, that's a common criticism. It's what you hear from coworkers and family members and friends, but there have been a ton of think pieces written about it.
Mm-hmm.
How do you actually do that as someone who needs to champion, needs to criticize, needs to shine lights on things?
Oh, yeah. It's kind of one of the ongoing tasks. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think I'm ever at a point where I feel like I'm comfortable with how much I'm aware of in terms of the shows that are out there, because there's always something new. And I think sometimes things are improving or getting worse. And so a lot of it is like, I rely on my coworkers who are all like on the Variety TV team. Everyone's watching different things and we talk to each other about what we're liking and what we don't. And then other than that, you know, I talk to the readers, or I try to let the readers talk to me. Sometimes I'll post something on my Twitter that's just like, what are you guys watching like tonight, like right now? Because I don't know what's happening right now. And, you know, it sometimes surprises me how many people are watching like wrestling, you know, like that. And the whole phenomenon of watching wrestling on TV, which is not something I'm very familiar with, is like this whole world, you know? Or like Rick and Morty, which is like this really tiny Adult Swim show from this guy, Dan Harmon, who did Community, and people love it. And people talk about it so much that I hear about it. So some of it is just like kind of keeping your ear to the ground. And then the rest of it is keeping tabs on the people you care, you know, the creatives that you care about or the networks that you trust, and looking at what they're doing and giving things a chance. And then also knowing, okay, I've watched 3 episodes of this. I don't think I'm into it. I don't think it's for me. And just being like, okay, cutting it off. Like, we're not quite at the point, you know, there used to be a time where you could be watching all the TV that was on, like back when it was really just the big 3 broadcast nets, and you would know every single thing. And even if you didn't like it, you'd still be watching it because you wanted to keep up with it. And now it's like, that's not really an option anymore.
No. And how has that changed the dynamic as far as networks and other platforms, as far as trying to get your attention?
That's a really interesting question. Because I feel like everyone is so desperate to just be looked at. And I don't mean for that to sound negative, because I sympathize. You know, we all are facing so much, there's so much noise now. And then, you know, at the same time, I'm sorry, how can I put this? I think that at the same time, there are some networks, I'm going to use Netflix as an example because they put so many shows out there, where I'm not always sure, you know, like if they're putting out a new show every week and it's like 10 hours or something like that, like I think at some point they're bypassing, you know, us, like whatever critical structure this is, and they're just like, the subscribers want more, so we're going to put more out there, which is fine. But, you know, then you just can't keep up. Like, you're like, this is moving too fast for me. Right. It's different when if it's like a half hour every week, like it is with some of the sitcoms we're going to talk about. Then you're like, I can keep up with this, even if it's not necessarily my thing. But when a new 10-hour episode, you know, a new 10-hour series is dropping every Friday, you're like, okay, I have to draw the line somewhere.
Do you feel, I mean, this is just, you know, you don't have to be specific about who, but do you feel a sense of dread when you see that some 20-episode already produced show is coming out on streaming and you know you're going to have to review every episode?
Yes. There are shorthands amongst the TV critics about some of these emails we get. Yes.
You can't share those with us.
No, I really can't. I really can't. But it's, you know, it speaks to how much we want to be on top of it. Do you know what I'm saying?
Like, right.
And I think that this is a volume that TV isn't used to, but other mediums have, you know, film, like 1,000 releases a year, if you count everything that's at festivals. Books, I mean, there's so many books. There are books in all the different kinds of languages, too. Like, if you if we were a critic in either of those fields, you know, we would be used to the volume. But TV critics just aren't used to this. And people talk about TV so much right now, too. You know, it's there's so much innovation happening. So we want to be on top of everything, and we can't always. And that's the challenge, you know. But it's a fun challenge. It's sort of like having a mountain of ice cream in front of you and right. trying to decide how to eat all of it. So
and realizing fun. As much as you love ice cream, you get a little sick of ice cream every once in a while.
Occasionally, you do need breaks. It's surprising. Yes.
Let's talk about trends in television. I mean, obviously, much has been spoken about, written about the fact that the top talent in the world is coming to TV right now. We talked about that on the last podcast we spoke with each other on. What is happening in television as far as trends that you love, that mm-hmm. you see, that you want to champion and you're hoping for? And what's happening as far as trends that you'd love to see
okay.
not be trends?
Okay, good. I am so glad I have an answer to both of these. Okay, so things I love, something I love is that television is more diverse than ever, and it's awesome. And when I say diverse, I don't just mean racially, although that is true, but I also mean in terms of getting more women in front of and behind the camera. I mean in terms of getting queer creators in front of and behind the camera. Mm-hmm. We're talking about trans representation. We're talking about immigrant representation. It's all over the place. And I realize that I recognize that that sounds a little bit like politically correct or something like that to just say, oh, and that's enough for me to like it. It's not enough for me to like it, but it is really exciting because as a TV critic, you watch so much TV, and when people are doing something different and it's honest and you can tell, it shines out. It like shines through the crowd.
Absolutely.
And some of the shows that we've talking about that have been, you know, have won awards such as Atlanta, Master of None. One of the reasons these shows really stand out is just because they offer such a fresh perspective on the same world that we all live in mm-hmm. that it just feels like it's like a piece of the puzzle that we didn't even know we were missing. You know what I'm saying? So that's awesome. And seeing that push on at different networks in different ways, you know, whether that is so like FX, for example, is trying to get 50% of their directors to be non-normative. So like non-white men, essentially. With the idea that that changes, you know, that adds a dimension to their piece. And frankly, like, it's incredible. It's incredible to see that kind of opportunity. So it's just really, you know, it's just awesome. And it feels like it's showing us America, like more of America.
Yeah,
you know?
It does. I got to say, when you look at these shows, it doesn't feel like dutiful diversity for diversity's sake,
right.
as some past years in entertainment have sort of tried to do. But the fact that increasing diversity of perspectives and of stories makes for really great storytelling.
Oh, absolutely. And people really like them. I mean, I think that's the other thing. Like Master of None, that's a show people love, you know, like when we talk about like the How to Get Away with Murder or Scandal, like these are shows that they're in very different ways are talking about maybe the same topics with new perspectives. And that's actually so much fun. And it's very captivating and it gets viewers. And I think that's important. It's really great to see the industry investing there. On the flip side, something I'm like not super thrilled about is just how many Marvel shows there are.
Address your emails to Sonia at Variety.
Thanks so much. I have to say there are some that have been great, you know,
yeah.
Like when I think of like Marvel's Jessica Jones, that was a great, like that was a great show. And I watched a lot of that show. Okay. Well, it was a good show. I think though that we have maybe, especially with this year, it seems like maybe we've maxed out on, mm-hmm. on Marvel. You know, there are two different broadcast shows that are taking on Marvel properties this fall. And then on top of that, you know, we have Marvel's The Punisher coming out on Netflix. Mm-hmm. We just had the, oh my God, what was that one called that just came out? It like isn't The Avengers, but it sounds like The Avengers. The Defenders.
All right, The Defenders.
Something
yeah.
like that. You're right, yeah. Marvel's The Defenders just came mm-hmm. out this summer. And I honestly, it's not even that they're not good. It's almost like I feel like there's just a saturation point, you know? Like we had the Luke Cage series and the Jessica Jones series and the mm-hmm. Daredevil series and the Iron Fist series. And then you have one where they're all coming together and now you have The Punisher too. And at some point it's like, how much? Like we're also going to see them on the big screen with The Avengers and Thor and Captain
right.
America. It just, it, you know, and then like, it's just a lot. It's just a lot. And they're all interconnected. And it's a little bit, it might be time to think about no more of them for like right now.
All right. Well, as we look forward to this season on television, let's talk about another universe that keeps expanding, Star Trek.
Oh, yeah.
We have a new Star Trek.
Yeah, yeah. So I haven't seen it yet because no one's seen it yet, right, for the record. But I am really excited about it. So it's interesting because this is going to be, it's going to be exclusive to CBS All Access. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's really interesting to think about viewers who grew up with Star Trek or who have watched it on Netflix, this show that is dated and you know, whatever version of it you watch is dated in some ways, to come to this like very new way of watching TV and be watching it. And then also like everything about it sounds so good. Like we've got a great cast. Sonequa Martin, who mm-hmm. plays the lead. The lead's name is Michael, which is funny because it's a boy's name, but apparently it's one of the Brian Fuller, who was the showrunner. That's one of his signatures. It's hard to explain. I've seen her. I saw her at a press conference for Star Trek, and I've seen some of the clips, you know, the trailers and stuff. She's so compelling. She's so poised. And I just want to watch her do everything. Like, I realize that's like weird to say because I have not seen the show yet. But as soon as I saw her speak, I was like, I'm on board. That's it. Yeah. I'm in. So that's great. And then also the fact that Jason Isaacs and Michelle Yeoh are both in her crew, like around her in this story. I don't know. They're both great actors. I've seen them in lots of things throughout the years. And just to have them in this space doing this thing in this universe that is beloved but can always innovate, you know? It's very cool. I'm really excited to see where they're going with it. And it just seems like with the production values we have now too, the special effects of Star Trek, which have historically been very campy, might now begin to approach like that really beautiful stuff we saw in the Star Trek films. Mm-hmm. And so that might be kind of fun too, right? Is to reach that moment. So I'm looking forward to it.
As good as the recent films have been, you also, that storytelling really is wonderful, episodic.
Oh, yeah.
And on television, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's a space opera, right? Like, to go back, like, it's the original space opera. And, you know, it's great to see them in the movies, but Star Trek is it's a TV show, and it shows what was so kind of great about TV before we talked about the golden age that we do now, before we talk about like the prestige drama. Like Star Trek was family friendly, the Next Generation, that's like a family friendly, very utopian show, and it's still awesome. Like it's mm-hmm. still great, and that's good. I think it's really cool that we can see another version of that now.
What other new shows are you excited about coming up? We've got quite a bit of new material coming up this season.
Oh yes, of course. Well, so let me talk about something not on broadcast. So The Deuce, mm-hmm. which is, it actually already debuted on
HBO.
On HBO. I think it was 2 weeks ago now it debuted. And it is from David Simon, who's the creator of The Wire. Mm-hmm. And so now that alone is enough to sell, like, the people who've seen, you know, if you liked The Wire, that's enough to sell you on The Deuce. And if you haven't seen it or you're not familiar, you know, David Simon was a journalist for many years before he went into television. And the way that he creates a world, he and his co-showrunner, George Pelicanos, the way that they create a world and they show you the details of it is, it's unparalleled. And The Deuce is taking on, you know, the adult film industry, which is a very weird and kind of complicated topic, right? In the 70s in New York. One of the things that's really great about it is that they like bring like gross New York to life.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, it looks like the 70s in New York, right?
This is not my line, but this is Damien Holbrook actually from TV Guide said when he was asking Michelle McLaren, who directed the first episode, he was like, I've seen the 70s New York like on screen before, but that looked like it was going to give me an infection.
Yeah,
it's like totally true.
Yeah, I was about to say I back that statement up. I mean, watched a couple of episodes now.
So just with the atmosphere, that's a great one.
Yeah.
So I mean, another one worth keeping your eye on, especially if you're a fan of The Big Bang Theory, is Young Sheldon, which is a spinoff of The Big Bang Theory, but it's actually a prequel. It's telling the story of Sheldon when he's 9 years old. Mm. What's really interesting about it is that Chuck Lorre, who's the showrunner of both of them, has opted for a completely different format. So The Big Bang Theory is like a very classic, like multi-camera sitcom where there's like very fixed sets on a laugh track. Young Sheldon looks more modern. It's single camera. it's kind of a story about a single mother and her child that's a little bit weirder than the other kids. And it's tonally just really different too. And I think that that's actually kind of cool, that there's like a different mode to pursue. So I haven't seen very much of it yet. You know, they only released the pilots, but I'm curious to see how that goes. And the kid is really cute. I'm going to get us Ian Armitage, who plays young Sheldon, is really adorable.
Who's been, I think I mentioned to you, has been writing Broadway reviews. This Ian loves theater forever. So anyone out there who's never seen his theater reviews, you should spend a couple hours on YouTube.
What I appreciate is that his commitment to the bow tie has been around for a really long time, even before the show, though he wears the bow tie in the show, too. So that's good.
I think that's good casting, him as a young Sheldon. I think that's pretty accurate.
And then another show that I'm really excited. Well, excited seems like not quite the right term, because I think it's going to be like really intense, too. Law and Order is starting a very like a fascinating new kind of experiment here. They're doing a true crime miniseries on the Menendez brothers' trial. So this is very much in the vein of American Crime. Am I going to say this? Is it American Crime Story?
American Crime Story.
Yep. Sorry, there's so many.
I know. It's not American Crime.
It's not American
Horror Story. It's American Crime Story.
So American Crime Story did the People versus O.J. Simpson last year, and it was phenomenal.
For FX.
It was phenomenal, and it got a lot of awards. And I think that Dick Wolf, who's the longtime executive producer of Law & Order, was like, hold on, we have this market cornered. So
that's exactly how I see it. Is when I saw this was coming out, I pictured Dick Wolf saying, wait, I do this better than anybody. What are you coming into my territory
And
for?
Like, look, in his defense, he does. I mean, Law & Order is, it's unassailable in terms of how, like, there's something so soothing about it. Mm-hmm. But it is really interesting to think about them shaking up that format with this true crime thing.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, Law & Order has typically been so good at getting, I mean, a lot of us, including myself, to like keep watching, that it will be it's very interesting to think of them taking on a historic topic. Law & Order loves to be ripped from the headlines, so that's not exactly new. But then also frequently Law & Order rips from the headlines in ways that might be considered exploitative, and it's fictionalized, so it's broadcast. This isn't going to be fictional.
You're not going to see that disclaimer this time.
Right, exactly. So it's really interesting. And at the same time, I mean, I'm honestly very curious to see what it looks like. I think they've tapped into something really interesting here. So I haven't seen any of that yet. They haven't released that one yet, but I'm looking forward to it.
And Edie Falco, I mean, a return to television for one of the best actresses around.
You never argue with Edie Falco. So it's going to be very interesting, I think. Yeah. Okay, and then I wanted to talk about a couple of returning shows that I am excited about.
Yeah, let's talk about what's coming back.
What's coming back? So, there's a few. So one, Curb Your Enthusiasm is coming back.
Yes, a ninth season of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
And like a kind of unexpected ninth season, because it kind of just went on hiatus, was it like 8 years ago? It might even be, and it was just like, oh, and we're like, who knows? Like, who knows what Larry David is up to? Just living his life. And then, you know, the fact that we're going to get a ninth season just feels like like a gift. Like, it feels like an unexpected gift. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how that is. Another returning show, another comedy, very different comedy, is The Good Place, also on NBC.
Mm-hmm.
So The Good Place is from Mike Schur, who did Parks and Recreation. Mm-hmm. And it's the first season. I don't want to give it away too much. It's with Ted Danson and Kristen Bell in the lead role. And it happens after this character has died, and she is in a place, the good place, which is the opposite of the bad place, in terms of the afterlife. But the thing is, she doesn't really understand what's happening or what the rules are of the afterlife. And the first season is both funny and really smart, and it just goes in a lot of different directions. And it ended on the biggest cliffhanger. So the second season, just seeing how that goes, is going to be really fun.
Do you think when you see a premise like The Good Place, I mean, I thought the pilot was terrific. I thought it really set it up well. Obviously, the talent involved behind the scenes and on screen are just great in that show. But it seemed like the kind of premise that just may not be able to hold up for a series. I was very impressed with the fact that they took that premise and then just sort of disregarded it to set up a whole new world for you.
Yeah. It's smart, right? They did a really good job. And I think that on broadcast especially, which typically tends to, you know, people watch people watch shows on network television because they want a little bit of a sense of comfort, which is fine. There's a little bit of a repetitive nature to it. But it's actually really interesting to see a show then completely decide to instead make its audience pay attention in a very different way to what it's doing. That's fun. And I think it's like really, it's like actually Ted Danson's so funny. And it's like really fun to watch. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that goes.
Also one of those series a new audience may find in its second season.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. For sure. Yeah. And the first season's also available streaming and stuff like that. They're doing a good job of getting it out there. Mm-hmm. Another returning show, and I'm a little embarrassed to admit this in public, but season two of Riverdale is like on honestly, one of my more anticipated shows. I watched some of the first season while it was airing, and then I watched it on Netflix just a few days ago. And it's a teen soap opera based on the Archie comics. Okay, right. So it's like extremely silly. And it's sort of like every other teen show. Like, I was watching this and I was like, oh, this reminds me of the OC or like the Breakfast Club, like if you want to go to movies or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, there's something so fun and silly about those, about the melodrama of all of that. There is a murder mystery at the center of the first season of Riverdale, so it has a little bit of a darker feel than you might expect from Archie comics, but it's stylized and fun and a little silly, and that's fun too.
Yeah. Television is a good place for guilty pleasures, don't you think? I mean, much more than if you were a film critic, you would not be able to admit some of your guilty pleasure movies. But for TV, you need to mix the whole thing up a little bit, don't you think?
I think so. I mean, you know, I don't even really use the word guilty pleasures I don't use that phrase that often because I sort of feel like there's not exactly anything to be ashamed of. Mm. Even though I know there's nothing to be ashamed of for liking a show that's a little silly. And I think that's especially true on TV because TV is very silly. There's a lot of TV that's very silly. And that's fine. That's like we can't all watch 10 hours of things that are really challenging, you know?
Right.
But at the same time, I think what for me, it's that Riverdale is like really meant for teenagers. And that I'm like, oh, here I am really enjoying the show.
Kind of sucked in there. What does that say about me?
Oh, what doesn't it? And then I guess another tossing this out there. TBS has been moving into comedies in an interesting way. And they're very like, maybe this is just because of the fact that I live in Brooklyn, but they did a show last year called Search Party that was set in Brooklyn. It's about Brooklyn hipsters, and it felt so accurate and real. The social world that it depicted was so familiar.
So specific.
So specific. Yeah. And that one's also, it's a murder mystery in its way. And so it was just done really well. So I was really excited to see what they're doing for this year. And I'm actually even more excited for this. So it's called The Last OG. Mm-hmm. And it stars Tracy Morgan. I always get his name confused with his 30 Rock character because they're both named Tracy. But Tracy Morgan, the real life comedian, plays a recently released prisoner who returns to his home in Brooklyn, but 20 years later Brooklyn is very, very different in terms of its gentrification. And so his wife, who's played by Tiffany Haddish, who was just in Girls Trip, and she's amazing.
She if great she's talent very
so funny
funny
and so I think she's with someone else, and his sons have grown up, and Brooklyn doesn't look like what it used to. And Tracy Morgan being Tracy Morgan is already funny, but I'm really excited to see him in this setting too, because there's a way in which it's going to seem very relevant, and then also, I think, hopefully really funny. So it'll be fun to watch.
That's great. How about Broad City? One of my favorites. Coming back.
Yeah. That's now, another really real show for me.
Very real. If you live in New York at all, whoever you are in New York, it's real on some level. But especially, so I would imagine, if you are a young woman in New York.
Yeah. Yeah.
it speaks to you.
And I mean, I think what is... So I watched a couple of episodes of the new season. It debuted 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. There's an episode coming up that surprised me with how real it felt. And it's partly because it's a little bit about politics. It's a little bit about how do the characters feel having grown up a little bit from who they were in the first season and where they are now. And that's actually kind of exciting to see, to feel that not only is this show a vehicle for these two very interesting women, Alana Glazer and Abby Jacobson, but also that they can change in the show and maybe become maybe a little bit more serious at times, maybe a little bit angrier at times, still funny. That's cool. I'm excited about that.
I believe Abby Jacobson directed that episode of the series as
the,
well.
The first one or the one that I'm talking
the,
about?
The second episode of this
Oh, the second
season.
Episode. Yes, oh, yeah, that's
It gets
great.
A little more political.
Yeah. Yes. No, it's great. And yeah, they're both so talented, so it's really exciting to see them branching out.
What else? What else are you rooting for that you haven't seen that you're hoping...
We'll do well. So I have seen this one, which is The Mayor on ABC. It's mm-hmm. a new sitcom. It's executive produced by David Diggs. And if you're a Hamilton fan, you know exactly who I'm talking
right.
about.
Right. You never forget the hair.
Yeah, you can't. And he's of course very funny. But he's not in it though. He's just the executive producer. So this is a show about a rapper who. It's actually a really funny premise. He runs for mayor kind of as a joke, but then he wins. And the actor is Brandon Michael Hall, who was actually in Search Party, which I was just talking about.
That's right.
And it's not that everyone is necessarily has politics on the brain quite so much, but I think it's hard to come out of the election and not feel that TV in particular is closer to politics than some of our other mediums, because that's where the news is and that's where... that's where we watch a lot of these things unfolding. So what's funny about The Mayor is that the first few scenes are him watching coverage of himself on TV. And I was just like, this is so, like, it's sort of so funny and so meta. And then at some point, Lea Michele plays the rival campaign manager who hates him, and they went to high school together. And she's like, oh, well, he's just a charlatan, like, looking for, like, media coverage. And, like, that would never happen in America. And there's this, like, pause. And it's like, oh, right. Nice. I mean, and again, not to be, it's just, it's like, I think it's a little bit cynical just about the entire political spectrum. And I think that's perfectly reasonable.
And celebrity, it sounds like, as well.
Absolutely. But, I think the twist is that our lead, he seems like a superficial guy who's just looking for celebrity, but he cares more than he lets on. And I think actually the voters realize he cares more before he realizes that he cares more. So that's part of the interesting appeal of it.
Well, the last thing I want to talk about is a returning show.
Oh, yeah.
That I'm very excited about, and I want to get your opinion on, because there's a lot that's been discussed about whether or not they can make magic happen again. But Stranger Things, a second season. I spoke to the Duffer Brothers when they were accepting the idea of a second season and trying to figure out what to do.
Yeah.
And they talked about how many people told them, you have to reboot this or you'll never be able to have the magic again. What do you think about this new season coming up?
As someone who is a little skeptical of the first, I am more skeptical of the second season, which is not to say that it couldn't be great. I will be first on the line if it's great. But the only reason I'm, you know, I think that sometimes we are eager to extend shows because we liked them the first time around, when sometimes like the story isn't going to make sense anymore if we do that. Stranger Things is not the worst culprit of that, but I worry about that. Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, it's really hard because those kids are really great, and David Harbour is really great, and Winona Ryder is really great, and of course you want them all back, and of course you want to go back to this place.
This year we've got Paul Reiser in the mix as well, which I'm thrilled about.
That's going to be really exciting too. Talk about like another TV heavyweight. I'm obviously interested to see what happens for sure. You seem excited though.
I am excited. I was surprised by the first. Mm-hmm. I was surprised by the level of storytelling, how nostalgic it made me feel, but that wasn't what I led with in my reaction to it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It could have just had me on nostalgia
or
genre, but instead they really got some wonderful storytelling and performances.
Did you like It? The new It?
I did. I have to say, and I'm a fan of the book. The book is very strange. Oh. I don't think you can actually make a film or television adaptation of all of the weirdness of that.
No,
book.
I don't think you
just
could.
Just wouldn't
either.
Work.
It's very disturbing.
I'd love to hear your thoughts on It, because I thought It was highly influenced by Stranger Things.
Oh, well, I actually think Stranger Things was highly influenced by It.
I think Stranger Things was influenced by the original It, which the remake became influenced by Stranger Things, which was influenced by it's a vicious Stephen King circle.
Well, but and that's the thing is, I think that regardless of how. My anticipation of season two, the fact that the audience that tuned in for Stranger Things really showed up for It, mm-hmm. you know, just this past or 2 weekends ago, that indicates to me that Stranger Things 2 is going to do fine. You know what I mean? Because the people who liked that are going to continue to be there for it. I haven't seen it because I can't do horror movies.
Wait a second.
I know. It's really, this is the real reason I'm in TV, actually.
But some of the most terrifying storytelling around is in television right now. How do you live through that?
Well, I actually loved the Twin Peaks finale, which was, I guess, a few weeks ago now. Mm-hmm. And it was so scary, and I had to watch it twice because I wanted to write about it. And this is the thing, when you watch TV, you can pause it if you need to, or like you're in your bedroom so you can like leave or whatever. So I had to, like, that's what I did. But I can't go to a theater because then you're in the theater and it's like scary and it's dark and you're like, I can't. So somebody's
gonna tweet Variety critic seen running out of it screaming, right? Like that, you don't want that kind of notoriety.
I basically lost all of my credibility right now.
But you just. You put out a high volume of writing.
Thank you.
On the digital platform and in the print
magazine, yeah.
But you are some of your busiest times sitting in your bed with a remote in one hand. And you've got to really take good notes. And
it's a muscle, you know, mm-hmm. like when you watch stuff. It was actually funny because there was some situation where it was in a meeting for half an hour, and then I had to email everyone what happened in the meeting, and I like did it pretty fast, and someone was like, wow, you're really good at that. And I was like, it's almost like I've recapped half hour things for like a really long time. And like, I know that that's like a silly way, but it's absolutely a muscle. And like, you know, like I was recapping Game of Thrones, and that also had me up like later on Sunday. So it's always like Sunday night, you're up like at a weird time because you're like, it's like 12:30 and you're like supposed to have posted your recap already. But there's like this one thing you're trying to figure out. And like, you know, it's a little bit of a weird existence. Mm. But it's also like, you know, I'm writing about fun stuff. So that's fine, too.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. To still find inspiration and joy in what you do when you have to watch 5,000 television series a season is really remarkable.
Well, the real thing is I probably was going to be doing a lot of this anyway, so the fact that I can do it for work is good.
That is a great way to look at it. So kids who are listening, whatever you're doing right now, figure out a way to parlay it into a job like Sonia and I have both
That's
done.
Exactly,
we're both doing basically the same thing we did when we were 12.
Yeah. Oh my God. No, literally. I just realized the other day that when I was 14 years old, and that was when I first started using the internet, and I would go to West Wing message boards and like talk about the episodes with people. This is like I know, talk about my credibility not existing anymore.
No, I think
but
that's great.
The fact that I was doing that, writing about TV and getting into political flame wars at 14 on the internet, I'm still doing that today. So kids, live your dreams.
That's it. Live the dream like Sonia Soraya. We are really happy to talk to you again. Looking forward to doing this at after we get some premieres of some of these new shows.
Watch some of these and let's do it again. Yeah.
Let's do it. Let's have a viewing party and we'll invite some of you all who listen to our podcast to come along and tell us what you think. This is Jamie Wax, CBS News contributor, and we are talking with Variety TV critic Sonia Soraya here in their Midtown Manhattan office about the new TV series. And Sonia, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. You can watch the full CBS This Morning broadcast Monday through Saturday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. on your local CBS station.
Or you can stream it live on the CBS All Access app.
For more information, please visit cbsthismorning.com.